Hey, this is Molly Tuttle, and you're listening to Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, senors and senoritas. This is Chris Shiplett, and you are listening to episode 173 of your favorite podcast, Walking the Floor. I'm here in Los Angeles, sunny Los Angeles, where it is so god darn hot. Feel like an AM/PM hot dog that's been left on the grill all day long. Because my little studio here, Walking the Floor World Headquarters, does not have air conditioning, so I can't think straight. My brain is melting, and I'm trying to put together a podcast. Man, it's just not gonna work. All right, let's talk about our good friends at Zounds.com, where you know that nobody makes the best gear available from the best brands more affordable than Zounds.com. You never have to pay full price all at once when you buy from Zounds. Especially if you use their exclusive payment plans, man. So get on over to Zounds.com today and get on it. All right, let's talk to Molly Tuttle. So you know, Molly Tuttle is a ripping guitar player. Sadly for me, fast blazing guitar solos went out of style in rock and roll a long, long time ago, thanks to a bunch of guys wearing spandex in the 80s. But not so much in country music, and certainly not in bluegrass, which is kind of like the shreddingest of the shred in the country music family. And bluegrass is the genre or scene or whatever that that Molly Tuttle, a Berklee School of Music graduate, grew up in. And although her music has evolved away from that sound a bit over the years, you can still hear the residue, especially in her ripping lead guitar playing, which I got to see her do live a while back at a festival out in Nashville that Foo Fighters played. I think it was last year. And I had seen some videos of her online playing and was like, wow, man, she can really play. So I wanted to see it in person, and I went over and watched her set. I think she was like the only other person that played that day that I went and watched their set. And then I noticed her backstage was like right next to ours, and I just kind of barged over there and was like, hey, I'm Chris. I'd love to interview for my podcast sometime. And she was cool and said yes, and it took a minute, but here we are. She's got a brand new covers record coming out this Friday, the 28th, and it's titled But I'd Rather Be With You. She recorded it remotely with producer Tony Berg helping put it all together, and you would never know by listening to it that that everybody playing on her new record were never in the same room together. It's amazing. A post-COVID reality of how recording will work for a while. I particularly, of course, like her covers of Rancid and The Grateful Dead. You know, if you had told me 30 years ago that sentence was going to come out of my mouth, I would have laughed in your face. They say, if you told me I was going to declare loving Rancid and a Grateful Dead song, I never would have believed you. But that is Molly Tuttle right here on Walking the Floor. Well, let's just jump in. I'm curious why a covers record now. Like, was this something that you already had in the works pre-COVID, or did this all come up after you found yourself with a lot of time on your hands not touring?
Yeah, this all came up after COVID. I wasn't really sure what I was going to do, and I just kind of got into this rut of, like, trying to write songs, but just not feeling very motivated or inspired, so I started going back to songs that I've loved throughout my life. And then talked with Tony Berg, who I'd actually been talking to him pre-COVID about making a record together. And we just thought it would be a fun project. We were both just like dying for something to work on. So we thought of me recording the stuff at my house, just picking some songs together that we both really liked. But the theme was just songs that have meant a lot to me throughout different stages of my life. So I recorded my parts and sent them to him, and he had other people play on them. And it was kind of interesting. Like, I didn't think I'd be so feeling so connected to a covers record, I guess. I've always just been drawn towards recording my own songs, but once all was said and done, it felt like a really special collection of songs to me.
It's an interesting thing with covers. I've actually, I've been in a lot of cover bands over the years.
Oh, yeah.
At various levels, like punk rock cover bands and then rock cover bands, you know, all that sort of stuff. And what I've found is like with picking the songs, a lot of times songs, and I really felt this actually when I did a Honky Tonk covers record a few years ago.
Oh, nice.
A lot of songs that you love that mean so much to you don't necessarily work for you. You know what I mean? For your voice or the way you play or whatever. So how did you sort of like fish through your record collection to figure out the ones that did?
That was really hard. That was definitely like the most challenging part of the process, which is picking the songs, because I have so many songs that I love, and then I would go to learn them and record them and they just didn't quite work for me, or maybe my version felt too similar. So a lot of like my biggest influences, people like Nico Case and Gillian Welch, I tried to cover them, but it was almost like I was too influenced by them. I didn't feel like I was adding anything new to the song.
They've already got that covered.
Yeah. it was a challenging process. And Tony Berg, who produced the album, was also really like, he has his own preferences for songs. And like, we listened to pretty different music. So it was like trying to find songs that we both felt really strongly about. Mm. I was mainly the one going out and finding these songs that were special to me. And then he would listen to my version and kind of be like, I don't know about this one. I don't know. But yeah, just having him, he definitely like had pretty high standards for the songs that we chose.
It's interesting because listening to your new record, I actually was unfamiliar with probably most of the songs on it are songs I don't know, and some of them like artists I've never heard of. So it was really interesting for me because I listened to your record and I love the record. I think it's so good.
Oh, thanks.
But I then went back and listened to a bunch of the original versions of them, like with, you know, people like Karen Dalton and stuff that I'd never heard of. And your versions are so different. And I had the funny thing of like, your versions are the original versions to me. Because it's the first version that I heard, even like Cat Stevens' song and stuff, you know what I mean? I just didn't know that song. So it was interesting. Is it fair to say like that this record is maybe less bluegrassy than your previous ones? And not just like pigeonhole you as just being a strictly, you know, bluegrass player or whatever, but this one seemed more of a kind of a departure into something else.
Yeah, this was definitely a pretty big departure. I mean, my last record, When You're Ready, was already felt like a departure from bluegrass because it was like not really any bluegrass instrumentation for the most part. But this one, we really felt free to get weird on it and just really branch out. There's moments where you can hear like flat picking, especially on songs like She's a Rainbow. So you can hear my bluegrass guitar playing at times, but overall it's just framed in a totally different way than I've done before.
Yes, you mentioned She's a Rainbow, the guitar playing in that, and the guitar playing in the Rancid cover. Both those, there's some serious rippage on those songs that I love. How did you mentioned Tony Berg before. Can you talk a little bit about like who he's worked with in the past that maybe influenced wanting to work with him now?
Yeah, he's worked with so many of my favorite people. He's worked with Amy Mann, who's one of my favorite songwriters. Recently, he's worked with Andrew Bird, and he's been a producer on Phoebe Bridgers' last two records, which I'm obsessed with those records. So when I met with him, in January. I went out to LA, and I went over to his studio, and we had coffee, and he was just naming all these people he'd worked with, and it was just like a list of all my favorite songwriters, basically, and the musicians that he hired on my session and musicians he works with are just really awesome.
And you said that you did it from, you know, remotely, like you recorded your parts yourself. So how was that to sort of not be in the room with the people playing on your record, to have that sort of that back and forth about figuring out the dynamic of a song? Like, did you just kind of put your trust in Tony, and then would you guys send files back and forth, or how did that work?
Yeah, it was kind of scary at first. I was basically fully trusting him as a producer to just put pretty much everything around the songs. And the first person he had was Matt Chamberlain, played drums on the whole thing. And that was really exciting just to get it back. And then I didn't hear anything for a long time after hearing the tracks with drums. And then he kind of sent them, and they were like full fleshed out like bands playing on these songs. So it was so different than what I'm used to. And I still have not met any of the people who played on the record, really.
I mean, was he also recording remotely with those folks? Like, was he sending the files to them or were they all together?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, was everybody kind of like just passing files around?
Everyone was like completely remotely recording in their home studios.
It's amazing that it's so cohesive. I mean, I wouldn't have gathered that. That's why I asked, like, you know, was this something that you had been working on prior to the lockdown? Because it just sounds like, you know, just sounds fully realized, you know, like a lot of times I feel like when you pass around files like that, things get kind of lost or get muddled, you know, and
yes.
I don't get that sense from your record at all.
Totally. It was definitely an experiment. And I think Tony and I were both like, it was like a surprise that we both felt like it worked so well and gelled and almost sounds like we were all in the same room. So yeah, we both like talked after doing the mixes and we were like, this is not like the most fun way to record because we're all just alone playing in our home studios, but at least we know it can work. And it's pretty cool that we were able to make it work. I'm really happy with how it ended up. So
who were the other people that played on it besides Matt Chambers?
So it was Patrick Warren on keys, Gabe Knoll on bass. It was awesome. These were all amazing players. Rich Hinman played pedal steel on the whole thing. And then we had Ketch Secor on vocals and Taylor Goldsmith from Dawes sang, and Z Berg, who's actually Tony Berg's daughter, sang a lot as well.
Oh, wow.
I think that's pretty much everyone.
I just interviewed Ketch recently and
yes, I saw that one.
Interview. He's so good. I love that guy. He is so
yeah.
Good. I saw that you played on that tornado song that they did. I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, Nashville Rising.
Nashville Rising, right. Yeah, which was like, wasn't that like the last moment before the lockdown? Because I think he even referenced you in the interview where he said something like at the end of the session, I think it was you said like, I have a feeling this is the last time I'm going to see anybody for a while.
Yeah, I don't even remember saying that, but it was definitely true. Like that was the last time I really played with a group of musicians, which is weird to think about. It's funny when you like maybe think it's the last time you're going to do something for a while, but are not sure.
Yeah. Well, so how do you plan on like, besides your appearance here today, which is sure to send your new record straight to the top of the charts,
yes.
how do you plan on promoting it and, you know, doing all the hoo-ha?
We're kind of figuring that out as we go. I'm definitely going to be doing some live streams. There's a studio here in Nashville that I think I'm going to go and we'll just do like a solo show basically and kind of make it like a nice live stream with professional mics and cameras and stuff. So we're doing that. I also have an idea to just go around to some of my favorite places in Nashville and do little pop-up live streams here and there. But we haven't really figured out the plan for that yet, but I'll probably just be doing a bunch of online stuff. I'm also playing a show at the City Winery and they're doing like a fully socially distanced show with a really small audience there where the tables are really far apart and everyone has to wear masks and get their temperature taken and stuff. So that'll be interesting.
What does that do to like the overall capacity of a venue?
I don't know the exact capacity, but it'll probably depend on what phase we're in. I think right now it's like a quarter or a third full maybe.
And that's going to be live streamed as well?
I don't think that one will be live streamed.
Oh, okay. I thought I saw somebody on Instagram, I can't remember who it was, posted something about maybe it was a Kendall Marva, I forget who it was. Somebody was like, I got a gig at City Winery. Or maybe it was Hayes Carl, I think maybe.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So
it's possible it will be live streamed. I need to double check that.
On that topic, since you know none of us are going to be hitting the road for real anytime soon, can you talk a little bit about like what this whole, you know, lockdown and pandemic means to somebody like yourself that's an up and comer that, you know, we work in this industry where a lot of the revenue streams have been kind of sucked dry or killed off in recent years or over the last couple decades or whatever. And it's like, all we have is touring and now that's kind of gone too. What is that? How do you sort of make heads or tails of, you know, how to make a living, or what, like, what does that do to somebody like you that, you know, I assume you make your living on the road, you know, like everybody mm-hmm. else.
Yeah, it's really strange. It's kind of like, it's totally changed how I think about everything. In some ways, it's like, I was working so hard and touring all the time, to make a living playing music for so long that in a way it feels like this big, like, pressure has been lifted. Like, there's no way I'm going to be traveling, hardly at all this year. Which in a way is kind of cool. It's made me really focus on what's actually meaningful to me. But then at the same time, it's pretty stressful, to think like how long this will be going on. I'm really thankful that I'm okay financially at the moment, but like, I am going to need to find a way to make money. We're starting this Patreon, that I've seen friends do for years. It's like an online thing where people subscribe monthly, and I'll be doing like a bunch of online concerts through that. So that'll be interesting just to try a new way of, engaging with my fans and hopefully, bringing in some income. But yeah, that's mainly something I kind of just want to do to stay engaged, because I miss playing for people and connecting right. with fans. I mean, but yeah, it's been interesting.
Do you, under normal circumstances, do you keep a band together full time?
Yeah, pretty much. I've toured with my same band for the last year since my last record came out.
So what are those folks doing now?
They're doing different things. My drummer Nick is, he's been like doing some sessions remotely. I think he was in town for like a social distance recording session lately. They've both been, Sam Howard and Nick Falk, who play with me, all the time, pretty much. They've both been doing some recording sessions. I think they both have remote recording gear. But yeah, they're trying to figure it out too, because it's hard to know, like, people are starting to go back into the studio now and record, but it's hard to know, like, if that's safe or not to do yet.
Well, especially yeah. considering singing and talking loud.
Yeah,
like
totally.
Like, the things that are dangerous indoors, it's like, that's...
Yeah.
That's not good for...
Just for staying indoors with people for, like, you know? Yeah. hours a day. Yeah. yeah. totally.
I know, it's scary.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about the wide range of like artists and styles and whatnot that you covered on this. Cause like I was talking about earlier, a lot of the folks I wasn't familiar with. So like who was, or is Karen Dalton? Is Karen Dalton still alive? I mean, I honestly don't, I'd never heard of her, and I love that song. And I listened to the original version of it, and I thought it was somebody current until I looked at the date that the release date
yeah.
was like 71. It sounds like something yeah. that could be put out like last week. It sounds very like current, like kind of hipster or something, you know?
Yeah, she's so awesome. And yeah, she was around like in the 60s and 70s. I think she was part of like the folk revival scene a little bit. Like, I heard about her just from reading like an interview with Bob Dylan where he said he really liked her. But I think she had a pretty troubled life. She's not around anymore, but her music is so cool. I found her, the first song I heard from her is this one, Katie Cruel, that she plays on banjo, and I was learning clawhammer banjo at the time and just looking for recordings of people playing cool clawhammer banjo songs that I could learn. So I found that one, and then just kind of went through her catalog and discovered the rest of her music. I don't know that much about her because I don't think she was performing for that many years, but her voice just gives me chills.
Yeah, it's really like... I don't know. It's very original sounding. I was like,
yeah, totally.
Kind of draws you. It's interesting, soulful.
Yeah,
got it. Interesting stuff. Yeah, I mean, you know, I love your version of Olympia Washington by Ransom. So tell the listeners about your sordid punk rock past.
Yeah.
How did that one wind up on the record? Like, are there pictures of you when you're 14, like with a mohawk?
I tried to be like a badass 14-year-old. I don't know. I recently, my music teacher in middle school like posted all these pictures of me and my bands in like seventh grade, and that's when I was in middle school. I like discovered Rancid and Operation Ivy. I think it was through some of my friends in middle school really liked punk rock, and their older siblings were like obsessed with Operation Ivy. I remember my best friend had like a really cool Operation Ivy hoodie that her older sister gave her. Mm-hmm. So we would like every day. We had a free period every day, and we'd like run to the band room and jam on like Operation Ivy and Green Day and Yeah, that was one. I think Olympia was one we never actually played in the band, but then in the fall I was playing in Olympia, Washington, and that song was just like running through my head all day. So then at soundcheck, I started playing it and my band was like, what is that? It's so cool. So then we worked it up and played it for that show. And then Ketch and I played it. We did a duo tour in December, just playing little venues around the Southeast. And I showed him that song and we played it in our set. So I got him to sing on that one. But yeah, that was just a fun trip down memory lane. I've always loved punk rock, and I feel like the bluegrass musicians that I really like kind of have like a punk rock attitude
in a way. Yeah, that's an interesting connection. And I think it's a big part of why so many punk rock people eventually kind of find their way to it.
Totally, yeah.
I love, you know, the guitar playing on that song and like I mentioned before, She's a Rainbow by the Stones. I love that it seems to be like a certain thing with people who can really rip, you know, but also are writers and singers and have that other part. Seems like sometimes those two things are in conflict with each other, and it seems like people maybe shy away from their more ripping stuff in favor of, you know, hey, I'm a serious songwriter and all that sort of thing. And it makes me really happy that you don't. Your music seems to embrace both sides of what you do. I'm just curious, like, if that's ever something, is that ever like a conflict inside your head, you know, like with, oh, I don't want to just be known as the, you know, the ripping guitar player or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I think I do think about that maybe too much. I think about it a lot because I like naturally am drawn to just like sensitive songs. I could just like strum a guitar and sing songs all day, but then in a way that's just like not musically satisfying to me after a while, and I really do want to stretch my guitar playing and keep that evolving at the same time. So I'm always trying to like find a balance between the songs that I write, but then also working to find interesting guitar parts for them. And with this record, it was like just kind of listening to songs and hearing, like, on a few of the songs, Fake Empire and She's a Rainbow, I listened to the parts and heard interesting piano parts that I could translate onto guitar. So that was a fun challenge on this record. But yeah, that's always a struggle for me, is trying to find the balance. And I know certain of my audience just likes to hear my guitar playing a lot, and they kind of start to grumble if I'm like only playing slow songs and strumming. So I don't know. I try to use that as like a challenge to try to find ways to
incorporate. Don't ever give in to that. Always rip. Come on. I'm a guitar player, so I'm biased, you know, but yeah. when did you start playing?
I started playing guitar when I was 8.
And like, when did you know that you were different than other guitar players you were, you know, growing up around, or people, I mean, I don't know how many other people you were sort of around that were your age that were picking, but like, when did you realize, like, fuck, I rip at this thing. I got some chops.
I think a couple years after playing, when I was like 10 or 11, I started becoming obsessed with it. And I really didn't know. I had a couple other kids my age who I would play with. My dad's a music teacher, and he had some other students that were around the same age as me.
Was your dad your music teacher?
Yeah, he was, pretty much. I had other teachers here and there, but he was my main teacher.
And does he rip like that too? Is he a guitar player mostly?
Yeah, really? He's a guitar player. He plays mandolin and fiddle and banjo and guitar, so pretty much all the bluegrass instruments. And he plays bass too a little bit. But yeah, his main instruments that he loves to play are mandolin and fiddle, but he knows enough guitar to like teach guitar, and he's a great guitar player.
So you were just immersed in it for your whole life, sounds like.
Yeah, I was pretty immersed. There were always instruments around the house, and I always just really wanted to play, but I didn't. It took me a while to figure out that I really liked playing guitar. Like, I would try to play fiddle, and I just was so bad at it that I gave up. But I think with guitar, I did, after just a couple years of playing, I thought I was like really awesome. And then I like went to a bluegrass festival and met people like Sierra Hall and Sarah Droz, who are still like big heroes of mine and friends of mine. And I heard them play and I was like, oh my God. So it was definitely an up and down of thinking like, I'm awesome. Like, I don't know any other kids who can play like me. And then hearing amazing kids being like, I suck.
Brought you right back down to earth.
Yeah.
Here's this is like an awkward question to ask, you know, especially considering the times that we're living in, but I'm just going to ask it. And I will for sure be deplatformed and canceled soon, but whatever. Why aren't there more women out there who play guitar like you? There are so many ripping, you know, fiddlers, mandolin players, singers, songwriters, musicians of all stripes, keyboards, whatever. But there really still aren't a lot of women who play with, I don't necessarily mean play like you, like the same style as you, but with that mm-hmm. level of, you know, of lead guitar chops.
Yeah.
In your opinion, like why is that?
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot because it's confusing to me. Like, I don't know why guitar specifically is like that. Sorry, there's a train about to go by my house.
That's good. That's good. That's good. Honky tonk ambiance.
Yeah, definitely.
A lonely train heading down the track.
Okay, I'm just gonna. It might get kind of loud. Is it really loud on your end?
No, it sounds good. I can hear it. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well,
you, you sound like a Johnny Cash song.
Nice. That's what I'm going for. Oh, yeah, with the guitar, I didn't really even realize that there weren't that many women playing lead guitar until I went to Berklee College of Music, and that made it, like, starkly obvious. Like, I didn't – anytime I took a guitar class, there would be not a single other woman in the class. And, in fact, some of the teachers, when I would walk into the room, they would look actually surprised that there was a woman in the class. Like, they maybe had never had another woman in their classes. Like, I remember this one teacher – the first day of class, he went around, he like looked at me and looked surprised. And then he looked down at the roll sheet and saw my name. And he went around to every single guy and was like, "Are you Molly? Are you Molly? Are you Molly?" And it was like this weird joke that made me feel so singled out. But it was just, it was a weird like guitar culture in college where I just didn't feel like I really fit in. And that could be one of the reasons there aren't as many women playing guitar, but I don't really know. I think maybe there have been like amazing women guitar players like Elizabeth Cotton and Mabel Carter. And I just feel like we need more women out there playing guitar to show girls that it can be done. And we need to like uplift female guitar players.
Wait, do you get a sense that that's changing?
I think so. Yeah. Like at least with acoustic guitar, I'll go to a festival and see girls like playing leads on guitar and it doesn't seem as, abnormal as it was when I was a kid going to festivals. So I hope it's changing. I think it is. Yeah, I don't know. It's really hard to say. I've thought about that a lot and I don't exactly know why it's so specific to guitar.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just in time, it's mm-hmm. changing just in time as guitar is becoming, you know, a dead instrument.
Yeah.
Damn, come on. Ladies need to save it.
We need women to revitalize it.
I know, seriously, it's crazy. yeah, I just wanted to ask because, you know, I'm obviously a lot older than you and came up in a different era, but there were really no women playing guitar in like my little neck of the woods mm-hmm. growing up and in the sort of rock and roll and punk rock bands and stuff.
Yeah.
It did seem like that started to change over the year, you know, through the 90s and mm-hmm. the aughts or whatever, but still not a ton of like lead guitar players.
Yeah. It's totally. When I think about growing up, like my dad would kind of go out and try to find women guitar players for me to listen to. Like there's this woman, Nina Gerber in the Bay Area who was a great guitar, she's a great guitar player and she played with Kate Wolf. And like my dad kind of saw her out at a festival and got her to give me a lesson and things like that. I feel like I didn't realize he was doing stuff like that at the time, but I feel like that's important for girls who want to play guitar is just to have role models and
sure.
Yeah. I think the more of that people can encourage.
Well, you are that role model now.
Hope so.
what was your sort of pathway to becoming, you know, whatever, a professional musician or an artist? Like how did you sort of get your foot in the door in the industry?
I went to Berklee for 2 years and then I moved to Nashville and I just started trying to meet as many people as I could. And I had all these songs and I just found a producer, my friend Kai Welch, and recorded them on an EP. And I think once I had put out my first solo recording of songs, that's when things started to take off a little bit more for me, and I got like a booking agent and started a band. But it was definitely like a slow and steady build for me. I just toured a lot and like saved as much money as I could to record my songs and stuff.
And what label are you on? Like, how'd you get a record deal?
Mm-hmm. I'm on Compass Records, and I had known Allison and Gary, who own the label, since I was a teenager. Allison's a wonderful banjo player, and they're around at a lot of bluegrass festivals, and I just met them through the community. But I really admire Allison and how she's built this business, and she's such a strong woman in the music industry, and she's an amazing instrumentalist on banjo, and she also like went to Harvard Business School, and she's just someone I really look up to. So she's been a really great mentor to me, and I just felt good about signing on with her and getting to collaborate with her.
And how does the label sort of feel about your musical evolution over the years, you know, sort of moving away from mm-hmm. a more bluegrassy sound?
They've been really supportive. Yeah, that's my favorite thing about them, is that they just are like supportive of whatever I want to do musically. Like they'll have suggestions if I come to them and ask for suggestions, but like they're just super supportive of whatever I want to do. So I'm the one steering the ship musically, like finding the producers I want to work with and figuring out what I want to do next.
I read online that you were planning to make an album of originals this year mm-hmm. as well. Is that still the plan?
I think so. I mean, the timing is all up in the air, as is like everything right now, but I'm working on songs to do another album of originals. Ideally, I'd love to record that this year and have it out next year, but we'll see if everything can fall into place.
How did doing sort of inhabiting all these cover songs, how do you think that has influenced your own songwriting?
I think it's made me focus on what I love about lyrics, especially. Like, that was one thing I really wanted to find, songs with lyrics that were really meaningful to me. And it's kind of inspired me to think about like what themes I want to write about. Like, a lot of songs I was gravitating towards were like Standing on the Moon, is so it references California and the West Coast, and so does Olympia, Washington, and all those songs. I just really like how geographically they kind of remind me of where I grew up. And yeah, it kind of just got me thinking about lyrically what I want to say with my next record. I think I want to make like a really personal record that's a little more specific about who I am than I've written before.
That's an interesting thing. You know, I found myself doing that with some of these songs on your new record, and specifically the one that you just mentioned, that Grateful Dead cover. Mm-hmm. I love, like, with songs that I love that hit me in a certain way, and your version of that song just kind of hit me it really struck a chord with me, and I think a lot of it was lyrical, and I wasn't familiar with the Grateful Dead song, so I pulled up the lyrics to the song, and I mm-hmm. love reading a song that I connect with and sort of reading it, trying to think about, like, what is it about this? What is the craft here that's mm-hmm. that's digging into me, you know?
Totally.
Do you ever do that? Do you ever, you do?
Yeah, pretty much.
Analyze them?
Yeah, anytime I'm listening to a new album, I have to like pull up the lyrics to every single song and like read them along, because it drives me nuts if I like can't figure out what the lyrics are, and I just want to like digest the lyrics too while I'm listening to the song. So yeah, I do that all the time.
I had one more thing I wanted to ask you about, which would just be like giving me a quick sort of beginner's guide. We can pretend this is for the listeners, but really it's for me. Like, give me a good like beginner's guide of, I don't know, maybe like your top three, you know, start here with these bluegrass classic records if you want to really kind of understand the genre. Like, bluegrass is an interesting genre to me, because I find myself drawn to the really old stuff, although I don't really know mm-hmm. what's what, or which recording of what song is sort of the one, and all those sort of things. And yeah. I really don't know much about, you know, anything post the 60s or you know, really.
I
know there's been this huge evolution in the genre. So what would you, mm-hmm. what would you point to as like, listen to this, this, and this for somebody that wants to figure it out?
Yeah, I think the specific records I'd say are probably like different than, I mean, I have my personal favorites. I would say like For me, my top three would be like Hazel Dickens, A Few Old Memories. That was one that like really stuck with me. A personal favorite is Vern Williams, Bluegrass from the Gold Country. I think he's just like the iconic California bluegrass guy, even though he's originally from Arkansas, but he moved to California and kind of got the whole scene started. But then past that, like mostly what I listen to of the old bluegrass would be like the Starday collections. I would say listen to like the Stanley Brothers from like the 50s. I never had like their specific albums. I always just had the big like collections of their work. But yeah, they would be my other top three favorite to listen to.
Awesome. Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
thanks for doing this today. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
I look forward to your live streams.
Thank you.
All right, that was Molly Tuttle on Walking the Floor. Make sure you go check out her new album, But I'd Rather Be With You. It's all awesome covers. It's out this Friday, the 28th. Listen to it, buy it, stream it, whatever you do, just go do it. And that's it for this week, and we'll be back sooner than you want us. Adios, amigos!